fish heads, roly poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, fish heads, roly poly fish heads.
Laughing happy fish heads in the evening, floating in the soup.
Fish heads, roly poly fish heads, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Ask a fish head anything you want to, they won't answer, they can't talk.
Welcome to the third ever episode of Cook It, Catch It, Eat It, Cook It, Catch It. We are here with Richard Schiff from Acme Smoked Fish Corporation, who is probably one of the most serious fish smokers you're ever going to meet. I call him the master smoker. And this guy from age 19 started over at Acme in Greenpoint, around the corner from my house, and has been smoking fish for a long, long time. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you.
We actually just got back from Acme. Rich gave me a tour, and I kind of saw all aspects of fish smoking. And we're here basically first to just talk about the history of the company, because it is such a cool company. How did you guys get started?
Well, the company was started officially in 1954 by an immigrant, Harry Brownstein. And before he officially started Acme, he was what you call a wagon jobber. And he would go around Lower New York. And at the time, there were 30 smokehouses in Brooklyn.
Right.
And Lower Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And he'd go around with his horse and wagon and would buy fish to sell.
Right.
As a, what you'd call today a distributor.
Okay.
And he had the dream of one day becoming a manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
He partnered with another jobber, okay, Ruby Caslow, who passed away, I think it's 2.5-3 years ago now. But he was, you know, he was a guy that I worked with. And at the time, there were three generations of family members working in this great business.
Unbelievable. And we're now into the fourth generation, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And you got started as a young kid doing sort of the retail end of it. Is that right?
Right. Acme, to this day, has a Friday shop.
Right.
From 8 to 1 every Friday. People from the neighborhood and people come from actually pretty far to come down and get freshly smoked fish at nice prices.
Right.
But during college, growing up friends with the family, they had brought me down one Christmas. They thought it was going to be a busy Friday, and they said we could use an extra person. And I came down, and I don't think I ever left.
Okay. We, I actually am guilty of having, 10 years in the neighborhood. I have never gone to the Friday sale. And I finally got myself down there, and I've been missing out for 10 years. It's really fantastic. I mean, apart from buying, you know, affordable smoked fish, you have a chance to taste a lot of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
And every week there's different things and some exclusive things to the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a nice community event where people sort of get to know each other. They meet each other online. I mean, it went from a Friday operation where I was doing it myself and bringing some schoolwork with me and having the time to do it
yeah,
to something that there's, you know, 3, 4, sometimes 5 people behind the counter on a busy day.
Right. Now, so basically, so then how did the business go from being, you know, a push cart to being, how many blocks do you guys own? It's like a lot of space.
It's a lot of space. I mean, it's the full block now.
Okay.
How did it go from there? You know, it went gradually, and that's been the growth strategy of Acme over the years, is a slow, gradual growth, organic growth. And I don't know if it's because we're so good or because some of the competition was not as good, because, you know, like I said, we went from 30 or so smokers to now there's, I think, less than a handful of smokers in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And if the chances are, if you buy smoked fish anywhere in the United States, there's a pretty good chance that it came from Acme. Am I right in saying that?
I guess numbers-wise, right now we're the shop that I took you to today is the largest smoked fish factory in the U.S.
Unbelievable. And it is, it's an experience, I have to say. You walk out smelling like a smoked fish, which I really enjoy.
Which is a good thing,
yeah.
Right?
Poor Rich has to go home to his wife every day smelling like a salmon, but I guess
and I say, what? I don't smell it.
And she's gotten used to it at this point, right?
Or as soon as I walk in the door, all right, change your clothes.
Right, right. But it's in your skin at this point.
It could be. I could be partially smoked at this point.
Tell us a little bit about the smoking process, because it's while it's not a complicated one, it's one that I think is maybe misunderstood sometimes.
Exactly. And I grew up eating this stuff, and it was a family favorite of mine forever. And, you know, I never really knew. Like, I used to say to my dad, how do they make lox? And,
right.
And he was, well, it's smoked salmon. I'm like, okay, but how do they make it?
And even the word lox is, we're sort of misinformed in using that.
Exactly. Because lox is not even a smoked salmon. Lox is a salt cured salmon that's been sitting in a tote of salt for anywhere from 3 to 6 months. So it's just completely salted. And then when you open the cask that it's in, you actually have to rinse it because it comes out stiff as a board, and you've got to get some moisture back into it.
Right. Okay. And I mean, you've done all the every process in the production facility, is that right?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. The two main processes that we do are the hot smoke and the cold smoke process. And what people misterm as lox is really just cold smoked salmon. You can call it Nova, Novi, smoked salmon, Eastern. There's a ton of different names for it.
We have amazing, we have a spread in front of us, so I'm salivating right here. What goes into... What's the difference between a hot and a cold smoke? I pretty much just learned this today.
Well, typically, it's the temperature at which you're smoking at. The cold smoked salmon, or the Nova, is cured via two methods. I'll confuse you even more, but we use two methods. We use a dry curing method and a wet curing method. They're both just ways of getting salt and flavor into the fish for preservation, for flavor.
Right.
And whether it's a day process or a week long process, depending on the size of the fish, the salt gets into the fish and you then put it on a rack or a smoke truck, as we call them.
Yep.
And we roll them into a cold smoke oven where the temperature is typically in the low 70s.
Right.
And it's really a mixture of drying and smoking.
Okay.
So there'll be high-powered fans blowing high-velocity air for a couple of hours, and then the smoke kicks in. The smoke generator produces, thick smoke.
Which I thought was cool, because we just, again, coming from the plant, it was like you had, you know, unbelievable technology, these computers with all these numbers popping up, and but then you had that connected to an old-fashioned smoke machine,
the Goliath 2,
which, I mean, it said West Germany on it. It was before Germany even, so it's an old piece of equipment.
Yeah,
and is that part of the process? It's sort of a combination of old and new.
Yeah, I mean, it's a definite art and science type of a thing, where. And even more so, I think, in hot smoking.
Okay.
Because cold smoking, the room for error in hot smoking is the temperature, really.
I see.
But like I was saying, the cold smoke process, you'll go back and forth from drying for a couple hours to smoke for half an hour, then drying and smoking. And you're really removing moisture from the fish because you're taking this wet, dripping salmon.
Right.
And you're pulling moisture out of it. The fans are drying it. They're... You know, water and some fat is dripping out, and it's a night long process. And by the morning, the fish is ready to get chilled down and packed.
That, by the way, was Rich just brushed the guitar that he's holding. He's a I don't know. What do you love more, fish or playing guitar?
I don't know. I'm a little bit of a hobby geek, okay. And I could just keep going about my hobbies,
right.
From kayaking and kayak fishing to guitar and my band.
Give us a little.
Who incidentally, Rocksteady is going to be playing this Friday night at 8 o'clock at La Mata's restaurant in Port Washington, New York.
Fantastic.
Costumes and all.
Fantastic. Give us a little a sample.
Wow, this is a little out of tune. Partially out of tune, partially me, probably. I play keyboards in the band, by the way.
Oh, really? Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah, I do.
Tell me, okay, so we've got our cold smoke, we've got our hot smoke. One thing that I was really interested in is the debate about, you know, whether farmed fish or wild fish, let's keep it simple, talk about salmon, is what's better, basically.
Well, it really comes down to is what's better for you.
Okay.
People will swear by wild, they'll swear by farm raised. To me, what I was raised on in the 80s and 90s sort of changed.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was aware of it at the time,
right.
But when my parents would go out and buy a quarter pound of what they called lox,
yeah,
to feed their four kids at the time, and everyone got like a little dot on their lender's toasted bagel,
right,
was different than what we're having today. At that time in the early 80s, you were dealing with almost all West Coast wild salmon.
Okay.
The salmon farming industry really didn't pick up momentum until about 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's been about 20 years since we've been getting more used to farm-raised salmon. But you know, right now the majority of what we're smoking is, mm-hmm, is farm-raised.
Mm-hmm.
I would say over the last 5 or 6 years, although we've never stopped doing the West Coast wild Pacific salmon,
yeah,
specifically the king salmon was the most similar to the eastern, we've never stopped doing it, but because of some press, because of some issues in the papers, people became more interested in only eating wild salmon. We're now doing three varieties, coho, King and Saka.
As an industry leader, do you think that, I don't know where to, personally, I'm wondering where you, excuse me, fall in the argument. Do you think that it's sort of fish farming is a necessary thing to keep up our stocks? Do you think that it's, you know, because there is tons of debate on this issue.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not against farm-raised, mm-hmm, salmon. I'm actually very much for it. I think it tastes better.
Okay.
I think that...
Can you explain why it tastes better? Because I might tend to agree with you, but why is that?
Well, the farm-raised salmon, mm-hmm, are fed a strict diet of the great stuff that's going to fatten them up.
Okay.
They're not working for their food.
Mm-hmm.
Wild salmon, sockeyes, cohos, and kings, okay, they're in the wild.
Yeah.
They're fighting for their survival. They're fighting for their food. They're swimming upstream to spawn,
okay,
and using up a lot of energy.
Right.
So they're also shedding fat, and they're a lot leaner,
right,
once they smoke out.
So they're lean, muscly killing machines versus a fish that sits in a pen, basically,
right,
which is getting fatter and,
right,
yummier.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, what about sort of the health concerns? And I know, you know, I mean, there's so many issues. Like one issue they talk about is the, you know, fish that can escape into the wild. I know some guys just caught a trout that was 40 pounds.
Right.
And that they, you know, that is not a natural trout. That is a trout that got out of a holding pen and is now out in the world chomping away and eating 10 times what its, you know,
right,
predecessors.
Well, that was probably up in like the Great Lakes region.
Probably.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, they introduced salmon to the Great Lakes for sport reasons,
okay,
years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like one of those careful what you wish for,
right,
things.
Right. Yeah, you have giant fish.
Right.
Right.
And there's the salmon trout, the steelhead, mm-hmm, which is, you know, sort of a hybrid variety.
Right.
So.
Right. And you're a diehard fisherman. Tell us a little bit about your fishing.
Well, I wake up at 3:30 in the morning to go to work.
Yeah.
on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah.
But on the weekends, I sleep in till about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the summertime, and I hop out on my kayak with my brother or some other friends, and we fish in Manhasset Bay, mostly in Port Washington.
Okay.
We're going for stripers, we're going for bluefish. We've got specially rigged fishing kayaks, and we have a great time with it.
Rich helped me the other day. I was I had an opening party, and I was for the fishing derby, Brooklyn Fishing Derby, in its last week. And Rich came over. It was an emergency situation. I went, Rich, I've never smoked a fish before, and I'm smoking one now. Help! So Rich came running over from Acme, and we were at Dream Fishing Tackle, and he showed me how to do. It was kind of a combination. It was kind of like a medium smoke, like half hot, half cold. I was sort of in a rush, so I had to do it quickly, so I was kind of grilling and smoking at the same time. But how do you, I mean, what's the difference when you smoke a bluefish, say, versus, you know, the salmon that you guys do every day?
Well, the bluefish that we smoke, they're all local fish from the East End of Long Island. We smoke them in fillet form. And we cure them, and some of them we put some hard ground black pepper on, and we're going to hot smoke those.
Right.
So those are going to get the, whereas the cold smoke process, which I described before, was a two-step drying and smoking process, the hot smoke process is going to just add heat. So it's drying, cooking, and smoking.
Right.
So, you know, there are strict New York State regulations as to what fish has to reach what temperatures, and our QC department would probably be great at telling you all those numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got to get cooked.
Right.
So that's the bottom line.
Right. And you guys are a kosher facility. If you can just tell me briefly what goes into that. I mean, you have to have a rabbi on basically standby. He's sort of overwatching the whole process. Is that right?
Right. And what he's doing is he's making sure that all of our ingredients and all of our raw materials are coming in from certified sources, and nothing gets into the plant that's not supposed to be there while we're producing or while we're not producing.
Right. And I mean, is that a tough job? Is that like a full-time?
It's a sweetheart job. I wish I had it.
Really?
I wish I had the religious dedication to
to
qualified.
Quite a few years of rabbinical school before you can get that one.
Right.
And this episode, by the way, is brought to you by TechServe, and we're about to take a quick break. I'm here with Rich from Acme, who is the master smoker, and when we come back, we are going to be tasting some incredible salmon and a variety of fish that's actually totally new to the market. Is that right?
That's right.
What's the name of it?
Cisco's. Baring Cisco's.
Baring Cisco's. And you guys at this point are the only people who have this fish in production.
That's correct.
Huh. And it comes from?
It comes from Alaska.
Right.
Do we have time to get into it now, or you want to?
A quickie. I'm kind of giving people the starter here.
Sure.
I've got it in front of me. It's a beauty.
And I can tell you there's a very strict quota on these because they are something that the Alaskan government has just granted an Eskimo tribe exclusive rights to, and they've got a quota of 10,000 pounds that they were allowed to fish for. And Acme has secured the entire catch. And for the second year in a row, we've got them all. And today was actually the first smoke of this run of Baring Cisco's, so we're pretty excited.
Well, I'm looking at it, and it smells unbelievable. And when I say it's pure as gold, it literally looks like a gold nugget after the smoking process. Right?
That's right.
Yeah. Cool. So we're here for another episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. And I'm talking to Rich from Acme. And when we come back, we're going to be tasting salmon.
We eat fish, short salads, and make rat ballads. The biochemical slang lord, or throw the average in the dolphin. Vocal cords, switch laser beams, my 777s. Broke the slot machines out in Queens, Grey Bouponis. Rebel on rap, smack corns, we like batons. Most my niggas smoke like Hillshire Farms. Check the gummy show, underneath my shoe lies a tap that attract bow-legged bitches with wide horse steps. And still no Zion Hill smoke, the blow on thuns. You run errands, priming team misses, afraid of my lungs. Turn my channel, it'll blow your whole bench off the panel. Like 80 Roman candles that backfire, that slams you every day. It's like a video shoot. Check this shit, I take it back to Playboy stash, guns and whips. Picture Afro pigs, shish kebabs, and dashikis. Thousand civil bars face the...
Ooh, I'm back with Rich Schiff from Acme. He is strumming away on the guitar. And we are looking at a unbelievable spread of salmon, sable. We have this new variety of fish that has not even hit the market yet, from the Inuits. We have a... What is the one in the back there, Rich? That's
our pastrami cured salmon.
Okay. And that one has... Is it sort of a pepper rub that's on there?
It's actually a standard pastrami rub.
Mm, okay.
That you can find in most of the rub suppliers.
Okay. All right. The rub suppliers. And tell me about... Okay, so we're kind of going around in a circle here, but the one in the middle is what you guys call black cod. Is that right?
Right. Or sable fish.
Or sable. Okay.
But that particular style of smoking is a favorite in two areas of the country. In the Midwest, Detroit and Cleveland, that's their style. Uh-huh. There's no paprika on it, and it's smoked at a higher temperature, so it's a little more cooked than us East Coasters and New Yorkers are used to having our sable. Awesome. And it's also actually pretty popular on the West Coast like that.
I'm going to just taste it.
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. It's incredible. And we were talking earlier about how sable is sort of like replaced Chilean sea bass, and Chilean sea bass has replaced sable, and it's been this kind of, I don't know, it's a fish that's interchangeable or not really?
Well, they've got a lot of similar properties to them, similar fat counts and all that kind of stuff. The color is pretty similar. Mm-hmm. But back before I even knew what I was doing at Acme, we used to smoke, when I came there on Fridays when I was 19, we used to smoke Chilean sea bass, and we used to smoke sable. Okay. And back then, Chilean sea bass was not the popular restaurant item that it became, and it was a lot cheaper than sable. Mm-hmm. So we offered it at a discount to sable for people who were looking to save and whatever.
Right.
It became then popular amongst our competition.
So that was back when Chilean sea bass was on the endangered species list.
It was back when Chilean sea bass was the Patagonian toothfish.
Okay.
That's before they marketed it as the, you know, thought of a better name. How can we sell a Patagonian toothfish? So,
which is now almost entirely fished out of the waters. But what happened, though? Because actually what you told me before is coming back a little bit.
Well, what people did was they were selling Chilean sea bass as sable. And, you know, when I started working for Acme as a full-timer and I started going around and seeing customers, I was able to identify what was sable, what was Chilean sea bass. It was very apparent. Mm-hmm. And I would go into retailers and, you know, appetizing stores in Manhattan, and I would ask them how much they pay for their sable. And they tell me this price, and then I say, you know, that's not sable.
Okay.
You're selling sea bass as sable.
So that was at the time a cheaper fish. It made more sense for them to use the Chilean sea bass.
Right.
And now it's, I would imagine, completely reversed, but that was when they were plentiful, right?
Right. And we always offered both.
Okay.
You know, we said, if you want to buy, I said, I could sell you that stuff at, you know, $2 a pound cheaper than this guy was paying because he thought he was buying sable.
Right.
And it was a great business tool, you know, breaking in where I was able to get accounts by just pointing out, hey, look, we've got it too.
This guy knows his stuff.
Exactly. So this sharp little kid.
He just called us out on our black market fish. Or it's not really black market. It's just that they were
pulling just the misrepresented.
Yeah, that's not really fair, I guess.
So we actually stopped smoking Chilean sea bass as part of an effort by a lot of restaurateurs and chefs to take a pass on Chilean sea bass.
Right, take a pass on Chilean sea bass, which I think, I mean, from what I know, the overfishing, while it's a commercial problem, it is the responsibility not so much of the fishermen, but the chefs, because the chefs are sort of the ones that set the trends. So if a chef says, you know what, I'm going to take a pass on Chilean sea bass, and that chef just happens to be Mario Batali,
everybody in New York responds because they're like, oh, I don't want to be seen as the idiot who doesn't know about this.
Right.
And then everybody in the rest of the world responds because New York is pretty influential in that respect. So right. when Acme says we're going to take a pass on Chilean sea bass, I would think that it has an effect.
Hopefully it does.
Right.
You know, I mean, Chilean sea bass, you know, like I said, it was a cheaper alternative. Mm-hmm. Once it became such a hot restaurant item, it became more expensive than sable. Mm-hmm. And then I think once people started taking a pass, it got cheaper again.
Right.
And sable or black cod, mm-hmm. it's becoming more popular now as black cod. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing it a lot in the restaurants now with this miso glazed appetizer that Nobu is famous for and all the other,
which I have to say is incredible, whether you're gonna try and
which doesn't do much for us in the way that we have to sell sable because it's mm-hmm. become one of our more expensive items now.
Right.
Used to be one of our cheapest items. Mm-hmm. When the president of our company, Eric Caslow, tells stories when he was learning how to cut fish, they would say, here, practice on the black cod, it's cheap.
That was a long time ago.
Now you have to really achieve some sharp skills if you want to cut some black cod.
Your gold nuggets, yeah. Right. Okay, and this guy, tell me again, so what do I do here? This is, tell us.
So you've got the Baring Cisco.
Right.
And just if you...
Hasn't hit the market before.
Well, it was in the market last year for a limited run.
Okay.
And... like I said, we've got our first smoke out today, and we're sending it to some stores tomorrow. We're going to have it at our shop on Friday, so people... We've already been tweeting about it.
And who are your specialty shops that get this stuff sort of before anybody else gets it?
Guys like Russ and Daughters mm-hmm. are going to jump on it.
Nikki. Where is Nikki from Russ and
exactly,
Daughters? She was supposed to be here today. No, that's not fair. We didn't give her any warning. And I said, Nikki, I need you to come on the radio tomorrow. She's like, who are you? Who is this person harassing me?
You should have had me call her.
Maybe we will call her. So, I mean, this is gorgeous. I just peeled the skin back. Is that the right way to do this?
That's exactly the right way.
This is the whole fish that I'm looking at. It's about, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 inches.
Well, if anyone knows... Yeah. Or can remember mm-hmm. a great product called Chubbs. Mm-hmm. This is like a jumbo chub, okay. and they're really the same species. Chubbs are actually Ciscos.
Okay,
they're from the Great Lakes, and their supply has been dwindling over the last few years for many reasons. But these Baring Ciscos, which are sort of like the jacked up versions of Chubbs, are available so far in limited quantities. They're trying to lobby to let these people fish for these more. But they eat similar to chubs. They've got a great oil content.
Amazing oil. I mean, I just had a little nibble here.
And it's got some sweetness to it.
It's incredible.
It's a great fish. It really eats
nicely. It looks
nicely.
Like a bunker. It's sort of like a fat bunker. It's kind of...
Much prettier than a bunker. Come on.
It's beautiful, but I mean, that's after it goes through the whole process, right? I mean...
I don't know if you could ever make a bunker look like
no,
that.
No, no. But
dip it in gold, it won't look like that.
But it's meaty. I mean, it's really... This is a meaty fish. It comes right off the bone, right?
Yeah. The back of that fish is just... You know, a lot of times when you get chubs, they're a lot of work.
Yeah.
And this fish, it just eats so easily. There's a ton of meat on the back of this fish. It's just... It's got a real plump, juicy back that... like I said, it really eats nicely.
I'm just devouring this fish. You probably, would you like some? But Rich is looking at it. He's probably had more fish in his lifetime than anybody else in the history of fish.
I was the first person in New York to actually try the Ciscos that came out of the stove.
After all these years, you still like eating fish?
Oh, yeah. My favorite food.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
If we're celebrating, you know, being growing up in a Jewish family, mm-hmm. Yeah, you have this stuff all the time when at births, celebrations, right. deaths. I mean, right. this is what we eat. This right. is our soul food.
Right. And that's interesting, too, because I learned something today, which is that cured fish like this, right, was smoked fish was actually not a fancy item back in the day when refrigerators had not sort of come to be what they are today. And it's interesting that you guys have kind of ridden that out all the way. I mean, back when it was a push cart business, people who bought fish were generally immigrants in Brooklyn who needed something that stayed edible for as long a time as possible.
Sure, yeah. And and lox, mm-hmm. the way it was packed in salt, you know, on the West Coast, and it would have to come over on trains. So right. it would take several weeks to get from the West Coast to the East Coast, and so they would pack it on salt, mm-hmm. and it would get here, and it was cured.
Right. This is honestly some of the best fish I've ever had right here.
It's good stuff.
And so, I mean, I'm kind of interested in what would you say is the future of, because you guys are in a hard business. I mean, while you are at the forefront, it's also a business that has its ups and downs and regulations. I'm sure fishing regulations affect you guys. And like you said, this, you know, this is a fish that right now is caught solely by one tribe of people. How does that stuff affect you?
Well, probably the biggest thing that affects us mm-hmm. is keeping the plant as clean as possible. Okay. And there are, you know, microorganisms that mm-hmm. we try to defeat at all costs. Mm-hmm. And we spend a tremendous amount of effort and time. We've got a staff of people in mm-hmm. our QC department that spend their entire day making sure the plant is clean. We have a cleaning crew mm-hmm. that comes in when we're not there, mm-hmm. and all night long there are people cleaning the plant. It's like a 90s you know, Daytona Beach foam party inside the factory every night.
I mean, we walked through it, and it was like, you know, these sprayers go off, and then this foam comes around your feet, right. and it's a kind of like a non-stop cleaning process.
Right, every 90 seconds at every critical doorway,
right.
whether it's leading into the plant or between different departments in the plant, to just eliminate as much cross-contamination as possible.
Okay. And is that part of the kosher process as well? Is that stamp, the official stamp?
No, it's definitely not, but it's not even a regulation that we have to do, but mm-hmm. it's just another step that we put in place to just, you know, just take that extra step to make sure that we're not bringing anything into the factory that's not supposed to be there on our feet, or, you know, on a cart that rolls from one department to the next.
Right. I'll just say that Rich had me wearing a hairnet, and then two hairnets, one over my hat, one under my hat, a beard sort of smock, and then a lab coat, and I walked through this place that I've never been so clean in my entire life.
That's right.
So you guys have heard it here. This is Catch It, Cook It, Eat It. I am your host, Ben Sargent, and I have the honor of having Rich Schiff in the house. And this guy's going to take it away on the guitar because he kills it.
When we get home, we play some deep.